I'd like to thank everyone for joining this session. I realize it is after lunch, but we'll make through it. It won't be easy, but we'll make through it. My name is Igal. I am a program manager lead in Windows Azure Fabric Controller team. And in this presentation, we are going to try to understand how Windows Azure internals work, how does this impact my applications, your applications. In some cases, it's important to understand. In some cases, it's less. But the real question is, what exactly can I do in order to gain high availability while using Windows Azure services? And we will try to understand how this can happen. We'll try to understand how Windows Azure infrastructure updates itself and when it could impact my service. And eventually, we will talk about custom workflows that can be implemented in order to update services running on top of Windows Azure infrastructure. What is not in the scope today? I won't do Windows Azure introduction. This is a technical session for folks who are already familiar with Windows Azure. We will look into some mechanisms that Windows Azure, some basic mechanisms that Windows Azure provides in order to assure high availability of the services, assuming that there is already some basic understanding of those. I won't give guidance on service architecture. There are many papers that give the guidance. My goal is really to walk through internals, to understand the mechanisms available, to talk about how those works, how those impact your applications, but not beyond that. The session is structured in the following way. We have four pieces. We'll start from looking into how Windows Azure is built. Essentially, this is introduction to our internals. Then we'll talk about PaaS, we'll talk about IaaS, and we have extra curriculum. If we have time, we'll take a look into infrastructure operations. Questions can be asked while I'm talking. I prefer the questions to come in the end of each section. I'll leave some time. So let's start. So if Windows Azure is an OS for the data center, I saw multiple places where it's referred as an OS for the data center, Fabric Controller is essentially the kernel of that OS. Fabric Controller is an internal distributed piece that makes the resource allocation, validates the health of the services that are running, manages the lifecycle, manages the hardware infrastructure of the data center. If I'm looking into Windows Azure as a whole, it abstracts the infrastructure and allows the developer to focus on the business logic, to focus on the application. It provides certain building blocks, certain resources for that. Fabric Controller is a piece that manages those resources, manages the infrastructure, the compute infrastructure. In order to better explain what is the role of the Fabric Controller, I'd like to walk through some demo of how the service is deployed into the cloud. First goal for each service developer after the service is developed is to deploy it in the cloud to see how it can run. It can be developed in Visual Studio or any other tool, and it could be updated to, it could be uploaded to Windows Azure either using Visual Studio or Windows Azure portal, or even command line. Eventually, all those end in the service that we internally call RDFE, Red Dog Front End Service. Those are essentially the REST APIs that we expose for Windows Azure management. And RDFE service will decide where exactly the service should run, either IaaS service or PaaS service. Eventually, we need to find the resources to allocate certain resources for that service to run. And we will find in the right region where those resources are available. RDFE will hand off the service definition to components that is called Fabric Controller. And Fabric Controller is essentially responsible to take this package and have it run, have it executed on the physical servers to have this component Rails validated to have, essentially to have it running on some servers. RDFE, when it finds the resources, it definitely looks into available resources, but it also looks into where other services for a certain customer, for a certain service are running, so that physical proximity can be gained. And we'll talk about how this physical proximity can be enforced, but we also look into other services that you are running in order to determine the right place for your next service. Essentially, here in the example, the yellow boxes, the small yellow boxes are the boxes that are running the, eventually were selected to run the service. If I'm looking into the data center architecture, the physical data center architecture, we can see that there are many, many, many servers in different data centers across the region. Those are organized into racks, connected together by aggregation switches. Nothing new. Very similar to the to any data center infrastructure, essentially, except that we do it in a really, really large and massive scale. Servers are organized into a unit that we internally call cluster. Cluster is essentially a management unit, a single unit that allows completely end-to-end management of the service of the services underneath. It doesn't need any. Generally, it won't need any external resources in order to manage the services and in order to manage the life cycle of the services running in it. From Windows Azure perspective, the single unit of isolation, of the fault isolation we look into is RAC. So this means that beyond RAC, there are no components which are not redundant. So in case RAC fails, we could definitely find how we recover the service in some other RAC. But if some other components fail beyond RAC, the system is built in such a way that redundancy is built in, and this shouldn't be impacting your service. If I'm drilling further into a single cluster, in this example I have 20 different racks in this cluster, there is a component that essentially manages this cluster. This is, I'm back again, Fabric Controller Component, but essentially manages this cluster. It has all the resources within the cluster. It knows exactly what's running there. It knows exactly what's available. It knows exactly what each customer needs, what each service needs. And it allocates those resources based on the customer needs, based on what you have defined for your service, or based on hardware state. In case of hardware failure, for example, rack failure, we would Fabric Controller would move the services from one rack to another, and it will, of course, try to reserve the right resources in advance in order to make sure that high availability is maintained. Fabric Controller, the software piece called Fabric Controller, runs within the same rack. It's highly available, distributed, so in case of even multiple rack failures, the manageability, the management services would still continue to be provided. So, so one last piece that I want to mention is that each rack shares Tor switch and PDU. Not necessarily important, but the important piece here is that nothing is shared between the racks, completely independent. If we drill down into a single rack and try to understand what happens in a single server, here's what we'll find. We, first of all, the resources are committed. Most of the services provided have specific committed resources, and those resources are allocated and maintained by a component that we call Fabric Controller Host Agent. This is essentially the hypervisor. This is a component that runs in the hypervisor of each host and makes sure the allocation happens, security boundaries are enforced, and resources, of course, are not shared. In this example, we have a couple of PaaS VMroll instances with guest agents running of them. We have some IS VMroll, just one, and some unallocated CPUs. Potentially, in the future, we'll run another service there. Right now, in this example, it appears empty. So CPU, memory, disk, networking resources, all of them are committed when we start a certain role instance, pass role instance or ISVM role. And this picture of what exactly is committed to whom is maintained across the environment and enforced across failures. In the next step in presentation, we are going to talk about how we use this infrastructure, how this information helps you to run your service in high availability. But before I go there, any questions? Cool. So let's consider for a moment fault domains. In Windows Azure, we treat single rack as a single fault domain. In case the whole rack goes down, we are making assurances on our side to reallocate all the code running on that rack to another rack as soon as possible. This is true also for a single node. If just one node fails, same thing. This is, of course, true for infrastructural components within the rack. By the way, in our terminology, we call it either node healing or rack healing when this operation occurs. I'd like to consider a simple PaaS application in order to explain how this process works and how you can make sure that this process really works for your applications. So in this example, I have an application with three web roles and two worker roles. There is a load balancer in front, and there could be some queuing or load balancing between web roles and worker roles. When the service is defined, fault domain number is allocated to each role instance. We support two fault domains. This means that you are guaranteed at least to have your code running on two racks. Maybe more. In many cases, it will be more. But at least two racks is guaranteed. When the more instances you set, of course, the better distribution it is. But from Windows Azure perspective, we will allocate it in alternating fashion, what we call fault domain 0, fault domain 1. Fault domain 0, fault domain 1. Fault domain will essentially tell different fault domains means they cannot those instances cannot be allocated on the same racks. So seeing different fault domain numbers guarantees that those instances are not on the same rack and protected from the hardware failure. So when you set up a service, we'll alternate the numbers, we'll assign those in fault domains in alternating fashion. When you change the service size, same thing, it would be enforced. However, if you perform operations on a single instance, you are responsible. So whenever you decide to reboot a PaaS instance, whenever you decide to delete PaaS instance, you need to make sure that you are not impacting your fault domain count. In many cases, if there are two, three, or four role instances, you might want to add another role instance to wait until it's up before you go and do operations on a single instance. How you can see it in the portal, I'll show you in a minute. You can either, by the way, you can also query it through REST management APIs and automate processes around it. When you create scripts to restart your PaaS instances, you could definitely take into account the fault domains defined. Another parameter that we exposed called update domain. Update domain defines what percentage of the service or what part of the service can be updated in the same point of time. And there are two types of updates we need to take into account when we are talking about the update domains. First one is you're trying to update your application. You want to do it in such a way that the overall availability time of the service won't be impacted. So with update domains, we'll take down just a single update domain at a time when we are updating your application. What does this mean? If you have five update domains and you have five role instances, only one will be down at a time. If you have 10 instances, only two will be down at a time. So when you perform update of your service, This is taken into account. But this is not the only point of time. Another point of time when it's taken into account is when we do infrastructure update. Think about the platform update that is being performed while your service is running. So for past services, it could be GuestOS update. For example, new GuestOS with new hotfixes has been released, and your service is configured to auto-accept it. It could be some update of the infrastructure, the hardware BIOS update, or even the hypervisor update that is coming. We will still enforce the update domains. In this case, we still won't take down more than a single update domain at a time. So essentially, from our perspective, any planned maintenance will only happen on a single update domain. How do you know which update domains your application is using? Once again, we'll take a look in a moment, but basically it's exposed to the portal or through REST APIs. We support by default 5 update domains, but using some magic, you can make it up, you can increase this number up to 20. I think the recent number is 20. So you can change the amount of update domains your application supports. You should have really good reason to do it, but it's possible, and for large applications, it will minimize the impact of the updates when those are occurring. Another interesting detail, explicitly for PaaS, is that when you create web roles and worker roles, we'll try to allocate the first instance of each to the same update domain, second instance of each to the same update domain. So essentially, when you use Windows Azure portal or REST APIs to create a service, you will see that basically the first update domain zero, of the roles is being updated at the same time when you update your application or when we update the infrastructure. So there is a correlation between the capacity of the service which is being down during the updates. What happens if you don't define, by the way, two role instances, you define only single role instance? We don't provide SLA. Our SLA is 99.99% uptime, and this is definitely only valid when you have two or more role instances. And I hope by this point of time it's clear why. Let's take a look for a moment into how this looks in the portal. I'm sure many of you saw that, but but I'd like to just emphasize on exactly what the parameters are and where you should look at. I'm looking into the service that I defined. It's called Eagle Build. Here it is. It has 5 roles, very similar to the architecture that I defined previously. And you can see that update domains are defined in an alternating fashion. Fault domains are defined in the same alternating fashion. 010 for web role. Once again, it starts 01 for the fault domain. I just defined those services, uploaded them to the portal. You can see the magic. It understood what exactly I need. It allocated the fault domains and update domains in the right way. Once again, if I were shutting down some of the machines or rebooting some of the machines or even deleting a specific instance of one of those roles, then those guarantees would go away, and you'll need to make sure by looking to the portal or PowerShell API that those things, in fact, are happening. So what can you do with this information? So first of all, you can change the count of update domains for your application. One caveat, this redeploys the service. So you may want to do it on your test service before you go to production or stage it through VipSwap. You can change amount of instances dynamically. But when you issue the command to change amount of instances, we will always take into account fault domains and update domains, and this will happen without the service being redeployed. We will just impact those instances which are added or removed. And the last thing, I just provided a set of parameters that you can query in order to script this and to get this information. shouldn't be too complicated if you need to use it. A couple of considerations before I complete this topic. So how do you update your service? We talked about fault domains. We talked about update domains. We understood why they're important. I hope we understood. What can we do to add flexibility to our updates? How we can make our updates more flexible to consider more scenarios? So first of all, we can change the update mode in configuration. Not many using this option. This could be pretty interesting. The idea here is that automated option, just default option, just goes update domain by update domain and updates your service. However, you can do it manually. You can decide that you want your own pause between update domains, or you want some other logic, and let's say update some single update domain, 20% of your application capacity, do some validation, and then continue updating the rest of your capacity. So you can do that by changing the service update mode, it's called mode in the configuration, to a manual parameter. Simultaneous, this is also interesting. You can actually blast your update to the entire service. You can make, let's say it's a hotfix, urgent hotfix, nothing works. There's no downtime to risk because service is down. You can blast it out. I would not recommend to blast it out as a rule. This is really exception in extreme cases, but just for you to know, this thing exists. Another method that I would like to mention is swapping, VIP swapping. This is many commonly use it. This is very efficient. You can set up your staging environment, make sure that your Azure service, Azure PaaS service, runs there. And when you are certainly sure that it works well, switch between the primary and the secondary. This is definitely the least amount of downtime, the less painful update. The concern that might be here is that you need to run your entire environment elsewhere outside of your main environment, and switching might, first of all, it might not be smooth, but also it might incur additional costs. So I think that's it from my side for PaaS, which is pretty easy. I think the summary of PaaS updates is if you use system functionality that is being provided and you change the size of your service using either auto scale or changing the count of your all instances, you should be fine, and Azure takes care for you for all the parameters we described. I can just show maybe another comment in the PowerShell. So this comment changes worker role in staging environment from two instances to three instances. I'll run it now. It will take some time, so we won't wait for it. But later on, when we'll take a look at it, you'll see that it correctly took into account update domains and fault domains. This won't be the case, by the way, for IaaS. But before we go there, any questions for PaaS? Sure.
When you initiate updated operations, is it automatically reconfigure fault domains to make sure you maintain fault tolerance
in
the update process?
So it allocates the next instance in the right way. It doesn't reconfigure the existing instances. You can maintain balance between fault domains by selecting the next fault domain, either 0 or 1. You have two options, 0 or 1, right?
Okay, so just looking at the example you had up there,
yeah.
If update domain 1 was being updated,
yeah. If update domain 1 was being updated? So first of all, that's a risk when you run only two instances. So let's understand. If you run two instances and you update one of them and there is failure on the other one, it can happen. You can minimize the risk by having more instances executed. Still, Windows Azure won't run more than two fault domains. So from your perspective, in order to ensure double failure with PaaS, in this example.
No, the one you had when you were up in, if you go back to the screen you had up on the portal.
Oh, sorry. It should be the same. This is a, so once again, that's exactly the case. No, the only point of time where the updates and update domains and fault domains are set is when you add or remove instances from your service or when you deploy your service. So you, in order to support double failure scenario, you might need 3 or 4 instances. Does that make sense? We can talk more about this later. There are fault domains and there are update domains. Fault domains are used for hardware failures. Update domains are used for updating the service due to multiple scenarios, but updating the service. So when we set those up, we set them in a way basically we alternate between them, just alternate between them. So essentially, first instance, will be on fault domain 0, update domain 0. Second one will be on update domain 1, fault domain 1. So double failure will not be supported, right? But, while you update update domain 0, which happens to be on fault domain 1, and in the same time your fault domain 1 fails, your service is down. To support that scenario, you might want to have more update domains. So at least part of your service stays up.
So the more instances you have, the better risk.
So you can see that with 4, this risk goes to 0, right?
Go ahead.
Both. We'll talk about IaaS in a moment. It's much more complicated. Essentially, we are going to remove the training wheels. This part was with training wheels. We'll remove them in a moment. Yes?
So your concept of fault domains, we've got two different fault domains, 0, 1, and 0, you've got there. The implication looking at this small example is that everything running in fault domain 0 is potentially running on the same rack. Of course, in a very large service, that's not necessarily the case. So what is it in a fault domain that is common between disparate racks?
Between, sorry?
You
don't have visibility. We don't guarantee that, and you don't have visibility into that. You should assume that 0 could run on the same rack.
It could, but let's say it doesn't. Can fault domain 0 fail, or are these fault domains somehow independent if the services are running on different racks? So are we talking fault domain 0 is also extending to the same phase with electricity supply or something like that?
Right. That's what I mean, right. Fault domains definitely relate to electricity supply, to physical cable. If any component of those fails, they are always mapped to a single fault domain. You shouldn't have 2 cables on 1 domain. I propose, in favor of time, to go ahead with the presentation, talk about IaaS. We can have some additional Q&A session later. I will be available at the booth starting from 3 p.m. today, and I'll be glad to chat. But in favor of time, let's take a look at IaaS. Okay, as I mentioned, the first part of the presentation is with training wheels. Second one is removing the training wheels. Let's take a look at the typical application, IaaS application. So I wasn't too creative. I found something very similar. But using the IaaS language and IaaS constraints. So we have front end and back end. We have some queuing in between, load balancing before the front end, and some storage behind the back end. First thing that you want to do when you define this application is to make sure that all of your components are in the same affinity group, running close to each other. Let me transform it to the language I used earlier. You want to make sure they're running in the same cluster, in using racks which are close to each other in order to improve communication, communication between the components. Make sure that it's quick and fast. You want to define availability sets. So what is availability set? Availability set essentially tells us that different VMs in your IaaS application are related. Essentially it tells us that those VMs run the same within the same role, do the same thing. And what we will do with this information, first of all, we will make sure that those VMs have different fault domains. We'll make sure that those VMs don't run in the same fault domain. If you don't define availability set, Azure doesn't know the relationship between your VMs, doesn't know how to distribute it. So you are, essentially, you will be hit when infrastructure is updated. You will be hit in certain hardware failure scenarios. If you define those, we will make sure that those are allocated to different fault domains. So I defined in this application two availability sets, front-end and back-end, basically different roles of your application. I want to share with you some interesting fact. Before this meeting, I looked into our current statistics of IaaS services, and I found out that almost all the IaaS services don't have availability sets defined. This means that most of the folks who are using Windows Azure could be impacted by failures, but by hardware failures or by updates. So you need to make sure when you're back home and looking back again into your application that you got this thing right. 90%, more than 90% are not using this parameter in the right way. Of course, same thing, we don't offer SLA if it's not two instances in the same availability set. So you saw the SLA. If you don't have availability set, doesn't apply. Of course, once again, you need to keep in mind that the overall SLA is compositional, it's per tier, and the SLA that we offer is really within the single tier. So single availability set will allow you to get the SLA that we publish. One another thing that might be interesting is that there is no real correspondence between update domains or fault domains for IaaS. From our perspective, it's a set of machines. It's administrator responsibility to set those up, to tier those up, to tier those down. So from our perspective, we will not make sure. The only thing that we will make sure is that each time you set up a new machine, it goes to alternating fault domain. So when you tear down, when you shut down your IaaS machine, once again, you should take into account which fault domain it is. You cannot leave it transparent. Given the fact that IaaS service, that IaaS update is something that administrator is responsible for, the coordination between the VMs, you absolutely must look into fault domain parameter. You really can't ignore it, and you really have to define the availability sets. Very similar thing happens with update domains. So, one major difference, Windows Azure is not responsible for updating the IaaS applications. From Windows IaaS perspective, it's just set of VMs. So administrators, you guys, are driving the updates. The updates are driving the order of the update. However, there are infrastructure updates that still happen underneath. And we still look into the architecture of your applications. So if you feel that your service is impacted by infrastructure updates, look again at this diagram. Make sure that you have the availability sets defined in the correct way. We will assume that up to five update domains exist for each IaaS application. And when you add your roles to a certain availability set, we will not take down more than one-fifth of that availability. Of that availability sets at a time. Not more than one update domain of that availability set at a time. Each time you add a new role, we'll just add in a circulating fashion the update domain number. But when you tear down the roles, once again, make sure that you look into the update domain. Let's look for a moment into the console. I create another service called Build Fabric IaaS, which has five services, and they have update domains and fault domains. Those won't be filled out correctly if I didn't have if I didn't define the right availability sets. So let me open a service and show you where it's defined. I'll open the front end. Front end configure. So we have availability set called frontend, and it contains those three machines, front end one, front end two, and front end three. Those machines could be load balanced. It's front end, it's probably load balanced. That's the most common architecture. And from our perspective, when infrastructure is updated, we'll try not to take for this service more than one at a time. If it was 10 machines, we won't take down more than two at a time. However, unfortunately, life is not so simple. I'm back again to the gentleman's question, which was very valid. Thank you. What happens if we have two things happening in parallel? Maybe platform update and user update, or hardware failure and platform update. And when you create your strategy, when you create your scripts for IaaS service update, you'll need to take that into account. You'll need to think about what happens in each and take those numbers into account. To take the update and fault domain numbers into account. Consider a scenario where you are updating your service and suddenly platform update operation kicks in. There's for multi-instance IaaS services, there's no way for you to know when it will happen. So you might want to take into account when you're creating IaaS VMs, when you're creating availability set, that this operation might occur, and you want to create more than just two update domains. Despite everything I said until now, we still guarantee 99.99% SLA for multi-instance IaaS VMs, just for two VMs. We still guarantee that. However, you need to take into account IaaS is your responsibility. You decide how you drive it. You decide on the strategy. You might want as well align with those numbers in order to avoid downtime and add right sufficient amount of instances to account for every possible scenario, which could be, in the worst case, failure and update, or two updates at a time. Probably those are realistic ones. One moment, let me run two more slides and we'll have some questions. So I wanted to share some guidance about how to manage your IaaS VMs. Just points to consider. It's really not how to architecture your service. It's really just points to consider how to manage IaaS VMs in such a way that high availability can be assured on top of Windows Azure. First of all, use availability sets. I think I already told that multiple times. I'll say it again. 90% are not using availability sets. Make sure that you enforce a physical proximity when it's needed. You can do that and by essentially adding machines to affinity groups. Do not use single instance availability sets for production applications. There is one caveat here, though, and this is the feedback that I'm hearing from our customers. We do issue notification before we are doing platform update for single IaaS instances. So some customers are telling me, you know what, maybe I'll be better if I just use single instance IaaS services. I will get notifications, so it's easier for me to update. This is the wrong way to deal with it. Because in case of hardware failure, you are still not guaranteed that it will work. In case of platform update, you might see your whole service down. From fabric controller perspective, there is no information whatsoever on the VMs and their relation to each other. We don't know the architecture. Your way to tell us about the tiers is by using the availability sets. Plan your update strategy up front. I think it's no-brainer, given the information that I just shared with you. You probably want to take those numbers into account. You probably want to use either REST APIs or PowerShell or Portal or whatever the right way for you, whatever the mechanism you are using to get the updates working. I think I mentioned everything on this slide, but one last point that I actually buried here, but I do want to mention it explicitly. Before you update your service, make sure it's available. Last slide, and I'll get to questions. Before you update your service, make sure there are no hardware failures. If you try, and when you script it, when you create processes for it, just make sure that you are not trying to update service when half of it is down. So many calls, support calls that we received were due to updates happening while the service is down. You might want to check for the amount of instances running, instances up, before you do update, during your update, multiple times, but just to be on the safe side and maybe pause the update until the hardware comes back up. Windows Azure guarantees that if hardware goes down, we'll find a new node and run your payload, run your VM on that new node. But this process is not instantaneous. It might take minutes, and it's probably right practice for the update scripts to take that into account and wait it out. We probably won't get to infrastructure operations, but I'd like to answer the IaaS questions in the time that we have. So I saw multiple hands.